freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
All right, here we go. Another Brock and Salk podcast. Are these worse after wins or losses? Or are they better? I mean, supposed to say better, not
which,
worse.
Which one do you want an answer to? Yes. No.
Are these better or worse after wins or losses?
Oh, funny that Howdy comes back for this one.
I know.
Yeah.
Seahawks win a couple games. Howdy's nowhere to be found. As soon as they lose, he pops his little head out like
Hello.
A whack-a-mole.
Good morning.
Yeah. So that
I
makes it easy. They're worse after losses
because
Howdy shows up. Yeah. Yes. There you go.
No, they're worse after wins. Because Mike's going to complain either way.
What?
And the complaining about the wins is harder to stomach.
Why would you say that?
Because they won, but boy, was it troubling.
Wait until these things rear their head in a loss. Then you're really going to
feel
the
second straight year, you're arguably making some decent points.
Sorry about that. My bad.
Arguably.
Well, that's the name of the game.
Definitively, Mike.
No, of course not.
Can I give you just a real quick little story before we dig into this beautiful, beautiful game? Because that open of our show, I hear Jim Mora every time, like we did for years and years. And now every once in a while, I get to do some national shows with a guy named EJ Manuel, who's just a terrific guy, former quarterback, great guy.
Florida State?
Florida State and Buffalo Bill and everything else.
Right.
And we were doing a show, and I introduced him and the producer to that sound. They had never heard it. Because there was some Brian Kelly sound, the Notre Dame coach ripping this USA Today writer. There's like 2020 is raw. Like all the emotions are out there. They're just raw. And so I shared that sound with them and they just were dying. Like they just couldn't believe it. And then less than 12 hours later, EJ Manuel is working with Jim Mora. He's like, you won't believe this. I did the Sunday show for ESPN and I'm on this email chain and it's Jim Mora. And every time I looked at his name, all I could hear him was him yelling at you.
Yeah. Oh, he's not a friend of mine.
Yeah.
I've known Brock a long time. Right?
Long Then he came on the show. He's fine.
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Yeah, he was all buds. Like two days later.
He was fine on the air. I was the one who had to talk him off.
He was fine there too, wasn't he?
Remember, he had a what was it? That
he had to go downstairs.
He had a broken leg.
Yes.
He had broke his leg skiing.
Yeah.
I told you to give me 2 minutes and call me back. I said, Coach, I give you 5. I'm still on the third stair.
My comment.
Right.
Well, thank you for making me laugh because I don't know how funny this podcast is going to be. What a god awful performance! It's Tuesday morning. I'm still mad about that. First of all, let me be clear about something. The Giants stink.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
Nope.
They do. Their defense doesn't stink, but as a team, they stink. Just overall. They play hard and fine. But they're not good.
Colt McCoy?
Yeah. Yes.
They're stacked.
Exactly that. What, is it Gallman or Dahlman?
Gallman.
I watched the whole game. I still don't know. Is it a G or a D?
Dude, Alfred Morris?
Alfred Morris is good in like 2002.
Oh.
Sterling Shepard's 5th try to be a number one wide receiver in the league?
What are we talking about?
Golden Tate resurrected after being benched for 3 weeks?
Brock, that team's horrible. Come on. They're in the NFC East and they're barely lead. They're like, they're bad. They're no better than Philly.
Salk, playground game. 22 players, 22 starters. They walk on out there. How many Seahawks? How many Giants?
22?
22.
20 Seahawks.
No chance.
Yes, chance.
There's 18 Seahawks on
there. There's Brock, 20 Seahawks.
You're taking both their corners. You may take one of their safeties. You take a couple of their D linemen for sure.
So take their entire D line.
You probably take a couple of their O linemen who just, you know, put their hat on you and just buried you in the ground in the third quarter.
Stop.
It's at
that
least
team,
eight.
That team was 4-7 coming in for a reason. They're not very good. They're not. And you should have handled them easily. So you can get mad about the various things that went on along the way. But it didn't even have anything to do with how bad the Giants were. That was just the first of all. That was just the first of all, on a side note, the Giants aren't very good. That's a side note to the conversation. The real conversation had everything to do with how the Seahawks played and what a confusing mess they've made themselves.
Yep.
Because they don't know who they are. So I can't tell you who they are, and you can't tell me who they are. None of us can have the conversation, you know, well, because they are this way, they do this, that, and the other, because they don't know. And you got to see it on full display on their little 4th-and-1 pass. Ugh. Ugh. Vomitorium. What was that? You get to fourth and inches around midfield, and you run that little dinky pat. Like, what is that?
You love that play. The first 4 weeks.
Great options?
First 4 weeks, that was one of our favorite plays. That was the play that should run in the Super Bowl. Just get out there. You got three
options.
You should
have run that play in the Super Bowl. I agree with you. Because they needed to be able to stop the clock if there was a problem. This was not that situation. This, they needed to gain an inch. They have Chris Carson, a big load of a hammer. Do they give him the ball? No. No, why bother? Well, when you can throw it. Ugh.
Evidently, they don't have Chris Carson.
Right, exactly.
As we've seen the last two games.
Well, I mean, he gains 9.5 yards per carry in the first half. But don't worry about that. We don't need that. What did they give him the ball? 13 times? They ran the ball 13 times.
He's pitch counted.
Big Carlos load Hyde's of a hammer? I think that's the first time I've heard that term.
He's a big load of a hammer. You don't think Chris Carson running downhill can gain you an inch?
Do you think if I say that on the air, I get made fun of? What did he just say? What? Big load of a hammer.
Yes, that's what he is. I'll stand by it.
He's coming downhill. He's a big load. He's going to hit you like a hammer.
Okay.
Thank you, Kyle.
Okay, I got you.
He's like a dump truck filled with one giant iron hammer.
Right.
Yes.
And then you either back it up or you move forward or one of the two.
Biggest iron hammer you've ever seen.
And then when you tip the bucket up, it falls on you.
But you have an inch. You need an inch. Let's forget that guy. We don't need him. Let's not give him the ball again. We got to make sure Russ gets his MVP award still. So let's throw it.
Are we there? Are we now Earl Thomas and Marshawn Lynch in the Super Bowl thinking that the Seahawks are designing things just to placate Russell Wilson?
Yes. I've been that way all year.
Really?
Wait,
I've been that way
ago.
From the beginning of the year. Nothing's changed.
That ship sailed.
That ship is way gone. It's been 5 weeks now since they've been trying to do that. They've been trying to put Russell Wilson in the corner with a dunce cap on, and now here he is.
What they is trying to do that?
Pete Carroll, Russell.
Well, that's because they told him to stop throwing 5 picks in a game.
Yeah.
Okay, but they're still throwing the ball nonstop. Did they run the ball? Did they reach their magic number of 50? No. No, because they don't run the ball. It doesn't matter that Chris Carson's got 5 yards per carry, that they're having success doing it. They got to keep on chucking because Russ got to win his MVP because the Smart 12 said so. You're all in this together. It's a big conspiracy.
It's a cabal.
You are mad.
They're all in it together, bro.
No, 48 hours, bro. 48 hours.
They're all
later,
in it together. They're all in it together.
But 2 weeks ago, they weren't. They were back to your
the Smart 12s and Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson and probably Mark Rogers playing a role. Brock, you might be involved.
Bake his departure cake.
It's a big conspiracy, and I don't like it because it's making the Seahawks bad.
That was a terrible game plan. I'm not going to say the Giants are a terrible, terrible team. You're going to see a worse team come in here on Sunday. So there's more dreck around the league than the Giants. They've won a bunch of games. It'll be them in Washington for the NFC East, and probably be a 500 team. So they're not terrible, terrible,
yeah, but
terrible.
Winning the NFC East is like winning the MLS Cup. It doesn't mean anything.
Oh no, Mike,
what?
Why?
Why what?
Why?
What do you mean?
You weren't instigated. No one poked you.
What?
Shame.
Brock
Shame.
Poked me last night, and you know it.
Oh. Who did?
You.
Me?
Yes, you poked me, and
what
you
about
deserve
the Sounders?
That. Yes, winning. Oh. That's the same thing. It's a division that does not wear the like
no,
best play.
This is not the CONCACAF Cup. Okay, this is the MLS title.
Right, the CONCACAF Cup has teams from Europe that matter. This is just America. It doesn't mean anything.
Stop it!
All right,
I'm not going to let you continue further. Apologize.
Sorry, I am sorry. I apologize.
That was a terrible plan. And I don't know what did Pete say yesterday? What was the consensus on Monday in his pressers? Did I hear the word adapt 10 times? That we need to adapt? That we need to adapt? That we need to adapt? Because they do. I mean, that was a horrendous. Jay Keep said that was the worst game plan that he has seen. Now, so he tried to take some of the burden off of Russell, which, you know, a guru is going to do. I'm not going to do that. I know, Salk, you are not going to do that. But that plan going into that game with the way they wanted to attack, especially offensively, was just horribly amiss. And you know this, and you knew it, and I was calling the game down in Arizona with the Rams and Cardinals. Good game. By the way, Arizona's got legitimate issues, and I think Larry Fitzgerald's probably going to retire because of it. But that's beside the point. I'm calling the game, and during different breaks, I'm looking at my phone. Like, oh, okay, 3-0, first quarter. Nice drive. Okay, still 3-0. Weird. Okay, 5-0. What is 5? How does that even happen?
Last time an NFL game went 5-0 at halftime. Also the Seahawks.
Of course it was. Right? Naturally.
Yes. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, well, this is just Pete playing against an inferior opponent in that building saying we're not going to make a mistake. Right? So they're probably just running it and punting it and just, you know what, against Colt McCoy, who's got happy feet, who's dirting balls in the first quarter. Like, nope. And our defense can handle these guys. And we've seen, haven't we seen that for a decade? Like, that's the way that they kind of play that, you know. But then I watched the tape, and that wasn't to your point. That wasn't the case. Mm-mm. They're trying to take shots.
Oh, yeah. That's why it was so embarrassing.
Oh, my gosh. What are we doing?
Yeah.
Run the ball. Quick game. Get the ball out. Get Russ on the move. Go up 10. Yes, DJ Dallas. Come on. Recover the fumble, and it's 10-0, not 5. And who knows what the complexion is, and maybe the Giants have to come out and throw it a little bit more or whatever. But, man, what a bad plan of attack, and that falls on Russ, on Shoddy, on Pete, on all of them. Russ is complicit in that, because 10 years in, that's just as much his plan as it is Shoddy's plan, and that was misguided.
So what is going on? I have a bunch of things on Russ, but let's kind of start with this question. What's going on with his decision making? It just looks broken right now. You saw the high and late over the middle, which led to the pick. Couple of really bad sacks, awful. I mean, the deep ball on the final drive that was completely unnecessary and thrown directly to a Giants player. What do you think is going on with Russ?
In between. Your simplest of terms that you taught me years and years ago when it comes to a baseball player. What's the worst place you can be at shortstop or third base? And that ball comes to you, an in-between hop, an in-between play. What's the worst place you can be in a batter's box? I'm in between. What's the worst place I can be on a pitching mound, right? I mean, what's the worst place a baseball player can be is in between. And right now, he's as in between as we've ever seen him. And you know what? There was more attention on him in the first 6 weeks than he had ever had. Every open of every game was Russell cooking, Russell MVP, Russell, oh my gosh. Russell has never had a vote for, seriously, the first 6-7 weeks of the season. That was the national narrative. And then there's 10 turnovers in 4 games. And that faucet gets turned off. And then he realizes, man, I can't play that way. I can't hurt my team. Right. Let me protect the football. And then he realizes this team is not good enough. And this defense certainly is not good enough for me to play that style. So I think he's betwixt and between. And I think you're feeling that. And we watched it Sunday. And I think that was more apparent than maybe it has ever been, because at least, you know, your team. And this is a total excuse and explanation, but I'll say it, because I've lived a little bit of this NFL world this year more than ever before. The lack of connection, the lack of being in that locker room together, the lack of really having time together, time on task as a team, being in meetings together, all of that stuff, that weighs. And I think it's played a role in why Carson Wentz is broken in his confidence.
But everyone has those problems.
I know, but you know what? No. I understand.
Should not have them the same. I'm not buying that.
But what are you seeing around the league? You are seeing quarterbacks. So you're like, come on, man. You've been to a Super Bowl. Come on, man. Why is your confidence a little bit shot? Why are you in between? I do think that's an explanation or an excuse.
Do you think it's kind of bringing teams to the middle? Right, where quarterbacks that don't have as much experience aren't as affected by it by those that do? I don't know, man. It should affect everybody equally. I don't know that I
Tom Brady is affected. He's the greatest of all time.
Tom Brady's 43 years old.
Russell Wilson is affected. He's one of the greats to play. Carson Wentz
is
totally broken.
I don't think so.
Kyler Murray is totally right now broken. You're seeing guys playing that position that you're like, man, you've never wavered before. Why are you a little bit shook? Aaron Rodgers is flourishing because Aaron Rodgers' family hates him. He didn't have any relationship with anybody. So this is perfect for Aaron Rodgers. He can't keep a girlfriend. And his family don't like him, so he's in his happy place. Why do you think he's flourishing?
Right, I think he doesn't like his family, maybe. But okay, either
and the,
way.
And the Chiefs actually get fans in their stands, and they actually have a lot more normalcy than anybody else.
So Russell spent 10 years asking for the ball and control and the power, and now that he finally got it, it rattled him, and he's between.
Yeah, I'm sorry, dude. I'm not
totally with
one.
You. I absolutely
there
agree.
There are so many better reasons for all
ten
the quarterbacks
turnovers
you just
in four,
mentioned.
10 turnovers in four games can shake anybody.
But yes. Go through all of those names you just mentioned. Tom Brady is old, no longer has arm strength, and is in a system that is completely wrong for him, where he's chucking the ball way down the field all the time. Carson Wentz has no offensive line, no wide receivers, no running backs, and a coach that doesn't seem to have any idea what to do with him, and he's playing in a city that's just downright mean, and eventually it has led to him breaking. Kyler Murray is a second-year player whose best gift is his feet, not his arm. I mean, like, you put all those...
Lamar Jackson was the MVP of the league. He can't play this year. Like, it is, you know, it's... I'm not saying it is the only reason, but I absolutely, having lived this life, having lived as a quarterback, knowing how much importance, relationship, and trust, and confidence matter, and when you don't even get to meet together, and you're not as a group and as a team, I think it starts to shake guys in some ways that's a little bit different than years
all right,
past.
So number one is lonely Russell.
Nope. I'm giving you some of the other stuff on the outside. I'm giving you stuff you don't hear anywhere
else.
He's lonely and sad. That's what I do.
Should we deliver him a meal?
Yes. We need to sign up on a meal train.
Should we bring Russell meals?
So we had Ichimo.
Right.
I mean, is Russell...
This is more of a loneliness thing.
I walk
thing.
These empty streets along the boulevard.
Yeah,
well,
he's
I mean,
lonely.
So that's one avenue I can go down. The other avenue that I know fits Salk's eye really well is maybe stop taping podcasts, maybe stop taping commercials, maybe stop running businesses, maybe spend a little more time on your game plan than doing all the other
stuff.
So you think
he doesn't know what to do?
I think, honestly, in the 60 snaps they had Sunday, he was in between. He was in between.
I'm surprised that you went in those two directions, honestly, not just because I had fun making fun of them, but I didn't think that's where you were going to go. Generally, after a decade plus of having these conversations with you, I thought you would go to too many hits. You've just been hit too many times over the course of the year, and that's had a cumulative effect on him.
Well, but that's been the story for the last 6 years, so... And we've seen him persevere through that and
fair.
Endure that and be so mentally and physically tough in that way. And
but
especially
we've also seen him.
Tough.
But we've also seen him do the podcasts and the businesses and all
yes.
that over the last 6 years. Too.
Correct.
Mike, it's
we've
a brand of cologne that smells like his love.
That's
for
right.
Please respect.
We've
that.
Seen that since before he even was named the starter when he was doing like Guess Jeans commercials or whatever it was.
Correct.
Levi. So, I mean, like, I don't know. I don't know that I'm buying that one.
No, and I'm not either. I'm giving you kind of everything. I'm giving you stuff that's
one
on the,
I think is a problem.
I'm giving you stuff on the periphery. That are both excuses and explanations.
Let me give you a
okay. What do you think is the meat of it?
I don't know if this is number one, but I think this is a factor. He's not fast or elusive anymore. That's not to say that he won't occasionally get away or won't occasionally run. He's leading the team in rushing, so I don't mean to make it seem like all of a sudden he's turned into, you know, like just a pile of bricks out there. But he no longer has the same sort of speed and elusiveness that he once did. So all of these moments hanging in the pocket, knowing that he can just escape and do something else, he's doing the hanging. He's just not always doing the escaping. He's getting caught. You end up with a sack, or he's just not able to make a big play. And I think that's affecting him. That's a transition. He has to learn how to play without his speed. It's been happening steadily over the last few years, but now you add in all of the hits that they've taken this year, the change where he's no longer getting the plays where he just gets to hand the ball off because they don't do that anymore, and now all of a sudden Russell Wilson isn't as fast as he used to, and it's affecting his ability to throw the ball.
Mm.
You buying any of that?
To a degree, but I think if you went back 4 or 5 weeks ago, you'd hear us say, gosh, he looks quicker this year, right? I mean, the first 4 or 5 weeks, he actually... was outrunning people, right? It wasn't Linval Joseph that nearly caught him.
So is he hurt?
Which happened a couple years ago. No, I don't think he's hurt. Nope, I don't think he's hurt. I think there is some wear and tear over the course of the season. I don't think there's any question about that. And you know, and as for honestly, my excuses.
But that wear and tear over the course of a season, in his case, if he's just barely edging into being fast enough, could end up being the thing that is the problem. Because the margin is really small, right?
Yes.
The margin between getting away from a would-be defensive end and not is an inch. It's not, you know, it's not a foot. It's just barely being able to sneak out and kind of go do your thing. Maybe there's also just some bad luck in there. But for a little over a month now, we have not watched really the same Russell Wilson that we saw at the beginning of the year. And, you know, I think that there maybe there's a lack of creativity in terms of some of the play calling. I wonder if there's too many voices, which is what you kind of said with being in between. There's just too many ideas. And when I hear too many voices, Brock, that kind of leads me back to the whole issue of do they truly know what their identity is? And when you watch them on fourth and inches run that little play with a little pass, I don't think they do know what their identity is.
Yeah, if I could show you right now my little sheet that I'm scribbling down, man, I'm put together some good stuff here while we're having this conversation. And I've got like my own little outline right here, but it's just kind of with some words. And I think that is it. I think that nails it. I can give you, and I do think, just psychology-wise, this is a weird year, man. This is a weird year where you do not have the brotherhood, where you do not have the connections, where you're not spending time together. And, you know, just as it is for us in this business, it's different. But we have at least 9 years of background, so we can hop on a podcast no matter where we are and find comfort, you know. And I do think it that is affecting guys over the course of the season that's going on. I really don't think his off-the-field stuff plays any role. I was just kind of trying to get a little goat. Yeah, I was trying to find
you won't
a little
succeed
bit.
With that.
I think the bottom line, you're seeing red way
too
much.
I'm
too
locked in. You can't get my goat today.
No,
I know what I'm doing.
No chance.
He has conviction. He is not in between.
Nope. I know exactly.
He absolutely knows his identity, and he is living right in that lane.
Yes.
Correct. What was that movie that had all the different characters?
The movie with all the characters.
Was that Snow White?
No. With the different emotions that showed you inside out.
Yeah.
There you go. Salk's in red right now, and there's no change in it.
He's like, Lewis Black.
Yeah. I mean,
yes.
Why are we sitting here watching the Seahawks play this style of football?
I cry at that movie every time.
I could walk onto that field today and play quarterback better than this.
I didn't say that. Let's not get carried away over there, Mr. Howdy.
He is in between because they have an identity issue.
Yes.
For 6 weeks, he was cooking, and it was easy, and there were completions galore, and there were shots all over the place, and he was putting up a prolific numbers on pace like nobody else. Other than Tom Brady and Peyton Manning with 55 touchdowns. I mean, that was the pace he was on.
You ever see that before at the beginning of a year? Mm. A finesse offense putting up a ton of points all through the beginning of the year.
Weird.
And they keep scoring and scoring, and everybody gets so excited. And Peyton Manning's the greatest thing of all time. And then, you know, it gets to be December and they stink. Like, you've seen this a million times. How many times do people have to get fooled by the same movie?
How many Ryan Fitzpatricks need to come around and light the world on fire?
How many times do you have to be fooled by the same movie of finesse offenses succeeding early, getting figured out late, and not being able to adjust because their offensive linemen are used to moving backwards, not forwards? Why don't you hand the ball to Chris Carson on fourth and inches? Because your offensive line is so busy moving backwards, they're not ready to move forwards.
Who are the best teams?
Who are
the best teams in mid-December as we're coming around here in the league? The New Orleans Saints and the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Kansas City Chiefs and the Rams, those are the best teams in the league. Why? Because as you get to mid-December, if you are not dominant at the line of scrimmage in this league, it is really difficult to sustain success and feel good in any matchup.
And is that because they spend so much time figuring out what you do, what your routes are, what your combinations are, just how to scout you? There's so much good scouting in the NFL that it's going to take them a while to figure it out, and you can out-scheme people for the first half of the year. But by the back half of the year, don't you think all these smart NFL coaches have figured you out?
Yeah,
and then it just becomes who's going to win a physical battle at the line of scrimmage.
But nobody cares
about that because we have all these numbers that shows we should pass every moment, and that if you're creative, the world is your oyster. And I just don't think it's true.
I just don't buy it. You mean like
that little play action play
that you ran, Chris Carson, for 3 touchdowns in the first 5 weeks of the year? The one that they ran on fourth down in Buffalo on their opening drive that was covered? The one they ran on fourth and inches against the Giants in midfield that was covered? You mean you have these plays and these tendencies, and teams over the course of the year start to study them and take away them? Yes. Yes, that is what happens in this league. And then when you're on a 4-string offensive tackle and you've had moving parts on your O-line and your right guard has hit a rookie wall, guess what happens? when you play the Rams. Guess what happens when you play the even the Giants or the Washington football team that got really good front fours? You get owned at the line of scrimmage, and then what happens? The game gets really hard. Gets really hard, and your quarterback turns it over 10 times in four games, and all of a sudden, like, okay, let me get back to playing the style that that I'm very comfortable playing and playing to win. And if it's a little bit ugly in the first half, that's fine. But then you don't win the line of scrimmage, and then your defense in the third quarter gets physically humiliated. I mean, embarrassed for 15 minutes and lets a team run right down their throat over and over and over and over.
They actually played a pretty good game other than that. Their defense did what you needed them to do. They showed,
17 points?
Yeah, but it was like...
fine.
Yeah, and 14 of them came in the third quarter, right? I mean, like, they did their job other than really one play in one drive. Now, it's not perfect, don't get me wrong, but they came up with the big play when you needed. And this is what you're leading me, Brock, to truly the problem with this game. And I know we're 20 minutes in or whatever we are.
20 minutes, we're an hour.
Whatever. This is you're getting me to where this game. I can live with it all. I can live with all of it. Everything you just said about Russell Wilson, all the problems, everything that happened for the first 58 minutes, I can live with. The fact of the matter is, your defense, much maligned as it has been throughout the course of this year, came up with the stop it needed to with 2 minutes left.
Yep.
They gave you the ball back with a minute 48.
Yep.
And two timeouts. Why weren't there three timeouts?
But two's pretty good.
I think they had
to burn one right there near the end, I think.
Wait, but, had to burn one before a field goal that the other team kicked.
Okay.
They also, I don't.
What was that?
They should have used their second timeout with 2:20 left, but Pete let it run down to the 2 minute warning.
Yeah, I get it. I actually didn't think that was that bad.
22 seconds. Ultimately, it didn't matter.
But he had the timeout in his back pocket.
Couldn't get him
in
the position anyway.
So you get the ball with a minute 48 and two timeouts. I expect my franchise down five. I figured the Seahawks had already won the game. I got to be honest with you. Cool. This one's over. Seahawks win. Russ has the ball with a minute 48 and two timeouts. Game over. Let's go. We get an elite franchise quarterback.
Like ninth inning.
I should have. I should have. I'd be happier today if I had.
Oh, yeah, you would.
My expectation is that Russell Wilson, in that moment, wins the game. What happened?
He almost threw a pick.
Yeah, and I think it actually goes a little bit beyond that. So I loved the way they started that drive, not just because they had success, but there were a lot of checkdowns, a little run by Russ. You got all the time in the world. Mm-hmm. A minute 48 and two timeouts to score a touchdown is double the amount of time you need.
Aren't you past midfield? You got past midfield.
You got two midfield.
Yeah, first
and then
down.
They got knocked back.
But this is what I don't understand is once you get to midfield over there, there was still over a minute left and you had a timeout.
Mm-hmm.
You start taking shots? Why? Here's why that bothers me. One, it's a low percentage play, right? It always. Anytime you're taking a deep shot, there's always low percentage to it. And all of a sudden, you get yourself behind the sticks a little bit, and you can be in serious trouble. You need to keep moving the ball forward. So that's one. Two, let's say you hit it. Okay, let's say it works out perfectly. You hit DK Metcalf in stride. I think it was actually Lockett that he was throwing deep to. But let's say you hit him in stride, and he waltz into the end zone, and you're up two. Maybe you're up three because you go for the extra point. You're giving them a minute to come back and score on you. Why in the world? What is the upside to the deep ball there? Can someone tell me why that's even in your playbook in that moment? There's no reason to do it. The best thing that can happen is that you score and give the other team a chance to tie.
The only explanation...
It's mind-bogglingly stupid. It blows my mind what a stupid play that is.
Throw the ball deep was their game plan all day. That was their plan entering the game. Throw the ball deep.
Well, it's got to be taken out of your plan. First of all, it hasn't worked all game. Second of all, even if it works, it's not the right play. And as it happens, Russell nearly throws a pick. Oh, but for the grace of God, does the guy not catch the ball? And so you are given life again, and then you end up with the sack, and then it's basically all over.
Yep.
But that's the play. That one play takes them out of their game. Yeah, I know. The sack ends up kind of sealing the deal.
Yep.
But why in the world are you even, why are you even drawing that play up? Because the next play looked like it was supposed to be a bomb too, which is why he held the ball so long.
Yeah.
Why the bomb? You don't need it.
Yeah, but that's all Russell's decision right there. That's not the only route. That was I think I can fit this in here in this zone. And it was just a bad throw. I mean, he just overthrew him by 5 yards.
Even if you can, it's the wrong throw. Even if it works, it's wrong.
Well, he wasn't going to score, okay? I mean, that was not a go route, one-on-one middle safety. That was I'm going to fit this between And yeah, it was just a bad throw. Bad decision, bad throw. And that was the name of the game for 60 minutes. A lot of bad decisions, a lot of bad throws, a lot of bad play calls, a lot of NCs on the grade sheet of no chance. And in a game where you needed, just philosophically go into that game to what we started with a half hour ago. That is a game that, they have played a number of times with an inferior opponent that comes in, a very inexperienced quarterback that was shook in the first quarter. Now, there were no 12s that would have further shook, I think, Colt McCoy. So he had a chance to, run the ball a little bit and play pass, and kudos to them to make just enough plays and enough conversions. But that's a game that you just say, okay, Chris, all right, we're down to our third tackle, and let's get big and heavy, and Will Disley, and let's pound this football. And if we got to go a little, put a little fullback in there, fine. Let's pound this football. Let's pound it and play pass and get them out of doing what they do. That team going into the game was number two in the league, only behind the Rams, and giving up big plays. As I was studying the Rams in my game, I was like, ooh, these Giants are actually 12 games in, pretty good at limiting the big play. I really hope that that's not the mindset. Well, that was the mindset, and it was the wrong mindset, and that's why their head coach said again and again and again and again 10 different times in his pressers, we have to adapt. Yeah, Pete, you have to adapt, and not after 60 minutes. You have to adapt after 15 minutes, after 20 minutes.
I'll take it now. You can afford to lose that game. It's not going to – I mean, there's only one bye to be had this year. Like, you lose that game, it's not over. That's the good news here. Adapt
number
now.
One seed is over. Number one seed is over.
Probably is.
Number one seed is over. Yeah, you're okay. Not being the number one seed.
But only one team is going to get that. It's not like most years where you get the two number ones. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, fine. Only one team gets a bye. Your season's not over yet. Not even close to it. So adapt now. Go trounce the Jets. Go beat Washington. Right? Go beat the Niners who look broken. And then to the Rams in your final game of the year.
You flip them. It's Rams.
Whatever.
Here.
Same thing.
Yep. Yeah, but all four of these games, they should take care of the Jets. They should, they should handle him and Darnold and that whole crew.
Should.
But
we're talking about Colt McCoy a couple days ago.
They should take care of the Jets. They're 0-12.
Yeah.
They should. They should. But why the Washington will be a grind. The Rams will be a grind. The Niners will be a grind.
But they should win grind. I don't mind them being grinds. That's fine. I'm not looking for them to blow those
teams
out.
Isn't that what drives Seahawks
fans
crazy? The Seahawks entered this game against the Giants trying to win a grind. Yeah, why not go blow him out? Pete Carroll wanted to win that game 10-9. You could see it from the first half when he's punting from the 35.
Yeah, but he's also chucking the ball deep the whole time. I don't know that's true. And that's
when
why
you're punting from the 35. He wanted to win that 12-10.
That's why they have these screwy identity things where they don't match with each other. You're chucking the ball deep but punting from the 40?
Correct.
Like those two things are not congruent.
Yep.
And that's why you keep coming back to this idea of identity and them not truly understanding who they are so that all the pieces fit together and make sense. Here's the good news. The idea that playoff teams don't win, playoff teams don't lose like that. Super Bowl teams don't lose that game. It's not true. We've said it for years.
Yep.
Super Bowl teams do lose games like that. Happens every year. But they don't also lose the Bills game and the Rams game. Like, you're running out of opportunities to say Super Bowl teams do lose games like that.
You don't lose them all the same way.
That's right.
Either.
Like, eventually that doesn't become true because of one game, but after five or six that are all kind of like, eventually it does.
Yeah, you know what happens in this league, and I think I'm feeling it more this season. Again, just kind of being on the road and talking to these coaches and listening to the radio in each of these markets that I go into. And we use that word identity a lot, Salk, and we think, like, just have an identity. Just have something to hang your hat on. Right? You've heard me kind of say that for years. What do you, when push comes to shove, what do you hang your hat on? What do you feel great about? What is your team? And I think you find that the cream really does rise. And it's where the Seahawks in 12 and 13 and 14 and 15, they were elite. They were Super Bowl champs in nearly back to back because they knew who they were. And you say, well, isn't that simple? No. When I'm listening on my drive to the airport about the Arizona Cardinals, guess what their whole conversation is post game? Who are you? Mm. What is your identity? You are the same thing. Kyler running around. Kyler had 10 touchdown runs. He was on pace to shatter the all-time record. And let Kyler run and have fun. And guess what? New England and Seattle and the Rams, they take that away.
Mm-hmm.
Take it away. Now what are you? Who are you? The Rams, right? You know, when you, again, I'll go back to the Chiefs and the Saints and the Rams and the Steelers. I think the four best teams in mid-December in the league. What, and I'll put maybe even Cleveland and the Titans right there on
Cleveland
the cusp of it.
Cleveland rolled the Titans. So, yeah, I mean, you got to probably have
But you know every one of those teams.
Yeah,
of
you know what
they are.
Yep.
You may beat them. You may be better than them. There may be some mistakes. There may be some turnovers. There may be some sacks. There may be some penalties. I mean, but you know who those teams are and who they're in the style they're going to play. And I think right now with Seattle, especially offensively, that's a conundrum they find themselves in, and they better adapt very, very quickly.
You mentioned the cream rising to the top. A perfect way to start talking here about Ascend Prime and what they are doing with Ascend at Home. They are reintroducing, Brock, Ascend at Home. It's the elevated answer to takeout. And they've got three tiers to it, okay? So it's a three-tiered approach.
Ooh, like the NFL has tier one, tier two, tier three employees.
They have signature dishes, but also offering dishes you can't find in the restaurant and dishes to fit multiple types of events or tastes. So I'm just going to start throwing out like the names and descriptions of some of the things that you can find on the menu, okay? So you can always get an eight-piece hamachi and truffle sushi roll. You and I have had the sushi there. It's ridiculous.
That was really good.
That's super upscale. You get the prime and Wagyu Angus beef steaks, coveted filet mignon, cap of ribeye and a New York strip, my favorite. Now, here's where we start getting interesting, because a la carte, the casual menu, has some of their new additions to the restaurant menu. So this is going to include things like sushi pizzetta, sushi tacos kits for home. You like deviled eggs?
I do.
Would you like a Nitamago deviled egg?
Sounds good.
I don't think you know what that is, and that's okay. You're just going to eat it. I know you like their Wagyu truffle burger, because I've had it with you.
Oh, please.
Yeah, yes. that's where you start talking.
Yeah, please.
Wagyu burger is kind of where it's at. Uh-huh. Like the steak,
by the way,
also
hold on
good,
a second.
But like when you elevate a burger that way, it's just, it's good luck.
A la carte or a la carte?
I don't know. Never really thought about it. I'd probably say both.
You probably say a la mode, but it's a la carte.
Yeah, I mean, he likes to go with the hard vowel.
It's
there.
Hard because I'm I say Aaron aunt. I say aunt, not
my bad.
Aunt.
But okay, get back
I get
to
confused
because
of my
sorry.
Time on both coasts.
Get back
don't get
to
us
the
into
tiers.
The Wayne Scott.
Anyway,
get back to the tiers.
Yeah, Wayne between Scotting.
I think you know what you need to know. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to go to exploretalk.com/ascendprime. You can also go to AscendPrime.com. But 7 days a week throughout the holiday season, kick it up a notch this year with Ascend Prime.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
All right, Brock, a little Blue 88. I think we got at least four questions for you today. Before, a lot of questions. Answer the Question Jar coming up later in the show. How about that? Ooh. Been a while. Been a while since we've done Answer the Question Jar.
We got imagine yourself answering questions.
Yes, we have many questions to answer, thanks to the good people of Twitter. We'll start with Blue 88 here. Tell me about the two guys who've been playing cornerback, and maybe more specifically nickel, over the course of the year. What does the future look like for DJ Reed and Ugo Amadi?
They will be competing, I think, over the course of their career. Neither of them established. But, yeah, I think they will be guys that will compete to make a roster, certainly for Ugo as a young guy every year in this league. And DJ's still a young guy, though he's been beat up and moved around a little bit. I can't look at the body of work here through 12 games and say, yep, absolutely. Yeah, I feel great about that, an established guy. And, you know, I think they've both done enough to show that they are, you know, it's that line, right? Mark Schlereth likes to say this a bunch. In this league, you have starters. And, you know, in order to be a Super Bowl team, you have to have some elite starters, and then you have to have quality backups. And, you know, and if you do, and you've got a roster that's 40 deep, you can compete for a Super Bowl. And I think both of those guys are right in between that spot right now. That I can't say that they're just a quality difference-making starter. You know, Ugo's probably a league average, maybe a little below nickel. He's not made necessarily plays on the ball, game-changing plays, plays his tail off. He doesn't look overwhelmed as a young guy and a first-year starter. But I can't just qualify both of them and say, Salk, yep, you know, pencil them in, going to be starters next year, 2021, let's go. This isn't Richard Sherman as a young guy. This isn't Earl Thomas as a young guy. This isn't even Cam Chancellor as a young guy. We're like, yeah, I mean, this guy's going to be a difference maker. They're right on that verge, and they've got four more huge games in weeks, and especially for Ugo, where that nickel is going to come and play a huge role against Washington, a huge role against the Rams. He'll get more opportunity even against the Jets, you know, to establish himself and say, I can be a legitimate starter in this league.
All right, question number two, you mentioned his name. Richard Sherman going to be a free agent this offseason. You want him back?
Nah. You watch your game on Monday night?
Some.
Some, yeah. Yeah, he's just not as fast as he once was. I mean, that's just 10 years into this league and Achilles injuries and other injuries and calf injuries and... And yeah,
he still grades out pretty well, right?
Yep. He still is a phenomenal from the neck up and teacher. And I shouldn't say nah. Like, it has nothing to do personally. None of that. I would have no problem. We saw Marshawn come back in here. None of that. None of that is off the field issues. And it is all about his speed. You know, does he have enough speed to still do it in the elite level? And, you know, also probably a little bit of what the market's willing to bear. He's going to be a free agent. And if the rest of the market says, yeah, nope, not going to pay, $14 million, $10 million, $8 million. You know, if it starts to get to a reasonable number, then possibly, but that cap is going to shrink. There's going to be lots of places this team's got to make decisions on, including, you know, Shaquille Griffin and Chris Carson. And so it would be low on the list. It would certainly not be a priority.
All right, question number three. We got a chance to watch your new favorite team, the Giants. Apparently you think they're really good. Something, I don't know.
A little hard
to explain what happened at the beginning of this show, but you know, what do you like about them? And actually, I think Joe Judge is going to be a decent coach, but what do you like about what's going on there?
Yeah, I think that's it. I think you're seeing buy-in, right? After the Tom Coughlin era, they have just gone through Shermer. Who is the other guy with the...
Oh, yeah, with the hair.
Roy Christmas haircut.
Wackadoo!
Ben McAdoo. You know, you've seen some issues.
Extra, extra large suit jacket.
Yes. Yes, Cody Barton borrowed Cody's Barton suit jacket. They have had some trials and tribulations, and they've got a guy that you can tell they just believe in. I'll tell you one thing, and I was reading this after the game, and you're going to see other teams decide to do this, especially coastal teams. He believes very firmly in regular sleep. So instead of every other team in the league would play the Seahawks and 1 o'clock kick, get done at 4, you get showered and you leave the stadium at, I don't know, 5:30 to SeaTac at 6:30. You know, that's 9:30 out on the East Coast. You fly 5 hours. You get home at 3 a.m. You get in your bed at 4. You have a terrible sleep. You're playing catch up. And he said, forget that. Why are we doing that? We're going to stay in Seattle Sunday night and we'll do our meetings in the morning and we'll fly back and we'll get home at 6 o'clock. And the guys have normal sleep all throughout the season. So on all of his trips, but I think it's very, very smart, you know, as much as science and sleep studies and everything has shown that, you know, getting that regular sleep is important. So you're going to see a bunch of teams adapt to that, especially in as they continue, I think, to have some success on some of those trips and get better as the season goes on and not wear down. Pretty savvy move from a young rookie coach.
Well, there's a little Blue 88. I thought you were going to talk more about the way he was mixing up his offensive line and using some guys situationally, because it's coming, Brock. It's coming. Eventually, eventually NFL coaches will understand that there's no reason not to do that. That using guys for the style of game or the situation in the game that you need, just like you do with your wide receivers and tight ends and running backs, and on defense, that you can do the exact same thing with your offensive line.
Yes, you let me know when there's 8 elite offensive linemen with unique enough different skill sets to trump continuity, and when that comes, you will be right on that argument.
So why is that true in every other position group in the NFL? Why is it true on defensive line? Why is it true with, you know, the way you bring in different wide receivers and different running backs and everything else?
Sure.
It's true in all those other ways.
Yeah, you can have like 3
receivers.
Yeah, you can have 3 different receivers, maybe 2 different running backs. Defensive linemen, you can have a couple run stuffers and then a bunch of unique kind of pass rushers. Yes, because, you know, defensive line.
Why wouldn't you want to do the same thing with your offensive line as with the defensive line?
Pretty simple job on defense.
If I need to move some of those big heavies, why don't I want the guys who are road graders as opposed to the guys that are pass protectors? And then all of a sudden, if I need to pass protect, wouldn't I prefer to have the guy? And again, they can both do everything. They're not incapable of doing the opposite.
Correct.
So you can run out of a pass formation and a pass heavy situation. just like you do all the time. Let's punch it all up at the line of scrimmage.
We're
running.
10 years,
yes,
bro.
We have to run. No, you can still pass out of it.
I've heard this for 10 years, and you may get there if the supply chain gets great. If the supply chain gets large enough, quality offensive linemen.
Do they have to be elite? What's the difference between Mike Iupati, Jordan Simmons, and JaMarco Jones?
They're all playing almost the same amount of snaps every game.
I would actually say the eliteness makes the argument less impressive. Like they don't. It's too because you don't have
elite players.
It's
you have
like,
situationally.
Right. Hey, you have the best first baseman in the league, so play him at first base all the time. I don't, so I've got a platoon, a righty and a lefty in order to try to get there. It's about the non-elite players and trying to get the most out of them.
You got one tackle who's an A-grade pass protector and a C-grade run protector. You can still run the ball with that guy. It's not his best strength.
Because if he was your starter, you'd still be running the ball with him even with a C grade.
Right. And then you have another guy who's a B grade pass defender.
Okay, but to Kyle's point about those three, what distinguishing trait do any of them have? Is any one of them Mike Iupati at this stage of the game is not a better run blocker? Right? All three of those guys are just pretty average. Which, unfortunately, across the league...
It's not about those guys in particular.
Yeah, but they each might have unique skills. So you don't
but they don't. But that's what I'm saying. In the league, it's hard enough to find five.
There are lots of guys that do. There are lots of guys that are better at running versus passing.
Okay, so it's Obwehi versus Shell, or just a different example of guys who aren't elite but have unique skill sets.
Just very hard to find eight very good linemen, and some of them that have different, and some of them that have distinguishable, like it's so much better as a run blocker than he is a pass blocker.
We'll see.
So
it'll
very
happen
hard
eventually.
To find that.
Just give it time. It'll happen eventually. Just give it time.
Love you.
Why have they struggled so hard, so much to find a right tackle? Like, why has that one position been sort of like, Giacomini was the guy who did it best, and even he was kind of a nut.
A penalty factory.
Right. I mean, like, when he was here, people crushed him. Then since then, it's gotten, you know, bad to worse depending on the year.
Shell's been solid.
Shell's been solid. But
Shell
then
was solid.
You know, he's hurt, and then all of a sudden, you're onto your fourth guy. And it's just like that one spot seems to have just completely eluded them.
It's like the Mariners' left field.
Yeah. It is a little bit. There's a similarity. It's like, why can't they find a right tackle?
This is Brock and Sox. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
Oh, back by, I don't know if it's popular demand or not, but I felt like it was a good time to do it. It's here.
I just realized for the first time that Jim Mora bookends our show.
Yeah. Well, that's how it should be.
Oh, that's I'm going to answer your question.
The open that was and now in the close.
Marathon press conference, like the day before his fire.
Yeah.
They were like, are you going to stand
I'm going to bookend. You know what I'm going to do then? I'm going to bookend this podcast with a quick little 30-second story I shared to begin the show.
I'll share the same one.
Nope, I'll share one here. It's John McEnroe's there, and John McEnroe, always the white whale that we never got on our show.
Right.
On Thursday, I called Kyle Brown in the afternoon, and I surprised him with a little story that happened on a show that I was doing where Garth Brooks called into the show.
How'd you know it was him?
Because I know the sound of Garth Brooks. I know that it was him, and yours truly decided to basically hang up on Garth Brooks.
What? That's what I would have done, but why did you do it?
Because I was trying to be polite guy, trying to be super nice, and Brett McMurphy was a high school and junior high teammate of Garth Brooks, and Brett comes on the show every week as a regular, and I told Brett how much I love Garth and everything else, so he surprised me by having Garth on the line. And then I, after about 3 minutes, was like, oh, thanks, Garth, you know, I really appreciate you coming on, and Brett texts me, he's like, why did you hang up on him? He was going to be there the whole segment, you idiot.
That is dumb. Why'd you do that?
You were so nervous. You're so starstruck.
I was.
Oh, I don't want to cause this guy any problems.
Can we get sound of this?
Yeah, I do. I don't have it right now. I can get it for you, and I'll send that to you, and we'll use it.
Let's play that in the
next
one. I'd like to hear that.
Yeah, Brock, that's where you need a great producer like Cloud of Your Eye to tell you.
You'd have been in my ear like, no, he's good. He's good. Nope, and I'm not throwing the producer under the bus, but Dennis did not do a good job.
Paisley?
Well, thank you, Brock. I mean, we're the intersection of college football and country music. Brock picked up the phone, and he knew he had to call me, and we sat, and we commiserated, we reminisced.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful conversation.
Sounds like it.
Next question.
That's cool.
It was cool.
You going to hang with Garth now?
I think so. Yeah, I think we're going to go.
Garth calling you Haas.
Are you sure it wasn't a cover, Garth? I mean, like, you,
I know it
you've
wasn't.
Seen cover Garth before. Are you sure this was real Garth, not
well,
cover Garth?
Well, cover Garth was about 5'6", 350, so yes.
But you can't tell on the phone.
Yeah.
This is like that Fox show. I can see your voice. Like, you can't see the person.
It was Garth. Next question.
All right.
Next question.
All right, we got a lot of questions. You ready for
Mike,
some
you've
of these?
Been watching a lot of that Fox.
Well, my kid, I told you, my
you're
kids.
You're talking, I can see your voice. You're talking Masked Singer, yep. Masked Dancer.
Yep. My kids are super into the Masked Singer. Yeah, we watch that all the time.
You are into it.
It's
good
awful.
For you.
It's really, really bad. But my kids love it. All right, here we go. From the Blabberwocky, Brock. Which is worse, abs day or legs day? Obviously, I'm not expecting you to respond to this one, Salk. I submitted a food question for you. You know, that's mean and really quite unnecessary.
What is worse, leg day at this age and stage of my game is worse? It endures and lasts for 4 days. Yeah, so I'd say leg day, squats and lunges and step ups and jumps, and it hurts more. The abs is good for me. You know, doing abs, yeah, it's painful in the moment, but it pays dividends, makes everything feel better.
I told you what I've been doing since November 1st, right?
Yep.
My buddy Rob challenged me to have an accountability bet with him, 100 push ups a day for the month of November. And any day you don't complete it, you owe the other person
it's like
$10.
Prison work.
Yeah, so I did it. I made it. We decided to keep it going into December.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
So still doing 100 push-ups a day, and I asked if we could add 3 minutes of planks a day.
Oh, my.
Yes.
Yeah. It's kind of one-up.
So
like that.
I'm going to say something. That, and please don't hear this as bragging, because it's far from that. But I think it's an interesting example of what just doing 100 push-ups a day can do. When I started doing, I hadn't done push-ups in at least a year, probably longer than that, I was doing 10 to 15 per set, right?
Like, yep.
And then, like, okay, I'm done. I'll do another test.
In good form, right? You're trying to do them with good form.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, Brian here really taught me how to get my elbows back and really do some good, you know, I watched some videos on how to have good push-up form.
Like Brian with the big old biceps?
Not that Brian. Brian Buckley.
Mm. Oh, gotcha. Okay.
I watched some videos and really kind of fixed the form, got my arms a little closer together. It was good. This morning I woke up and now I'm doing sets of 35 or 40.
Wow. Whoa.
So I woke up, I'll do like 40, 30, and 30, or 40, 35, and 25, or something like that.
100 is not going to be enough for you at this pace.
It's great. Nope. It's amazing.
Hang out 100 like, before 8 a.m.
It's pretty crazy how quickly your body will respond to that stuff. Mm. Yep. So I don't say that to make it seem like I'm some jacked. I mean, like, I'm sure there's people who bang out 100 push-ups without a problem. But it is pretty interesting in just a month how many.
Is your chest firm?
No. No, it still looks terrible. No, it's not working like that at all. No.
You go out to Woodinville and you cut down a Christmas tree, and this year you just ripped it out of it. It's like, oh, Heather, watch this. Two-hand chop. How have we not gotten more Mr. Christmas talk? What's going on? Is the tree up? Is there a bird in the tree?
So
what's going
on? So the last few years, you may remember, Kyle. Last few years, we had the problem with the tree kind of
dying.
Yeah, wilting. You had a wilting tree.
All right, so here's what we did this year. A couple of things. One. Really just one thing. We put less on.
But it's really important.
You put sugar in the water.
No, we didn't do that. Oh. We put less on the tree.
Oh, that makes sense.
We bought a slightly smaller tree, half a foot smaller, and then we put less on it. Fewer lights and no garland, like the metal garland.
Lessen its burden.
Yes.
But you usually go big tree, right?
Yeah, we usually go 9 feet. This year, we dropped it down to 8.5.
It's a big tree. Still.
Well, because we have sort of a lofted space there, so you kind of have to go big or else it
fill
looks,
it out.
Yes. Right. So that was those two things. We're still going noble fir, but the noble fir is on its last chance.
Oh, if
because the
it dies prematurely.
The problem with the noble fir is it smells great, it looks good, but the branches aren't that heavy. Or they're not that strong, so they kind of they need to do push-ups.
They're less
themselves.
Voluminous, which does show off the ornaments a little more.
Yeah, so I got a friend who has a Nordman fir.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. That was sort of intriguing.
Yeah, Fraser fir.
Yeah.
I had a lot of options. Turkish fir.
Yep. Yep. A lot of options. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Next question.
I am still the expert on Christmas.
Yes.
I don't know.
We always turn to you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'm rooting for your tree this year.
Are you?
Yeah. Your tree has been very similar to the Seahawks the last few Decembers. Just wilted.
Wilting.
So.
Well, at least this year I remembered that it happened in the past as opposed to
completely
forgetting about it.
Well, you adapted.
Last year we had to show him two pictures to be like, Mike, you tweeted about it. It was a radio segment. Here's the podcast.
You didn't even remember, poor
completely guy. Had forgotten about that.
Yeah. How is your memory these days?
Not good. Okay. You can ask Kyle and Howdy. We were in a meeting the other day, completely forgot something we had done no more than 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
Yeah,
that's true.
All right, next question.
All right, I'm looking for some good questions.
Next
here.
Question.
Hold on. Where'd they go? Is DK Metcalf perhaps invisible? I mean, did you think they didn't look at DK enough? I didn't get that sense.
No, they looked at him all day.
All day long.
Here's the problem with them looking at DK. Russell doesn't like to throw into coverage. We've seen that particularly the last 3-4 weeks. DK Metcalf, when he looks covered, has demonstrated he is actually not covered. He can go up and take that ball over the top of a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So, is that a great match? Russell doesn't want to throw into coverage. DK's never covered. He wants DK to be wide open, streaking across the field.
Yeah, it's not going to be like
that. But DK can make a play on any ball.
But he can also drop any ball.
Throw the ball up to DK.
They did, and DK dropped it.
Well, that's going to keep happening. At least this year, he's not fumbling like he was last
true.
Year.
True. You're going to just count a drop a game, right?
You're going to have to.
At least. Yep.
Generally in a really crucial spot.
Next question.
All right, answer the question, Jerk. What meat dish do you most associate with Christmas?
Prime
that's
rib.
From Brian. Go prime rib.
Yeah, prime rib.
Prime rib.
Howdy?
There's a fish. I think it's called like Lufnasa. It's a Swedish fish, I believe.
Mm. Sweet, like the little red ones?
Not those kinds, okay. No. Yeah, but it's very very common.
Salted? Isn't it salted?
Probably.
Yes, very salty. It's big, though.
It's,
yeah.
Is ham ever? I think
a lot of people
go. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think Grandma Peg went ham at times.
In the past, we've always done these tenderloins, but we're going to maybe try something different this year because no pressure. Nobody's around. It's just us. Mike goes, Heather's from her youth, you would always have Swedish meatballs. Mm. Mike makes Swedish meatballs.
Go to IKEA or something?
Well, I think we might make them ourselves.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you got options.
Like the little ones in the crock pot?
I don't know. Maybe. What do you think of that?
I think they're supposed to be big, aren't they? Real Swedish meatballs? Aren't they supposed to be real big?
I don't know much about them. This is new to me.
The Swedes don't go big. They're pretty...
The Swedes keep it small?
Conservative.
Huh.
I was trying to think last week if Thanksgiving dinner cracked, for me, the top 5 holiday dinners. I don't know if it did. I go Christmas dinner 1. Then I'll go maybe Easter with like a nice ham. Then I'll go 4th of July barbecue. I'll go probably St. Patrick's Day.
What?
And then I'll go with like all this garbage you roll out for Thanksgiving.
That's
and,
one of
and
the
I might put Halloween candy at number 5 that's and Thanksgiving one of
the,
6.
Kyle, that's one of the Mike? Dumbest takes that you've had in 10 years.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about turkey.
Oh, so good. That's you're not making it right. You spent all that time.
Says the guy who thought turkey needed to be rolled in prosciutto.
It was great.
It was
delicious.
Because it wasn't turkey.
It was.
It was prosciutto.
No, it was a thin layer for taste.
Oh, it was great. We just rolled it up with cheese and a different kind of meat. We smothered it in gravy, and then it was digestible.
Oh, my gosh.
Seriously? Is that... Salk, I know you don't remember many of his takes, but was that one of the dumbest he's ever had?
It's as dumb as when he said that Thomas Rawls is better than Ezekiel Elliott.
Amen.
Next question.
Let's see. Are the Huskies good? Doesn't look that way. I would say no.
Speaking of adapting.
I mean, again, we talked about this earlier. Like, winning the Pac-12, it's like winning the NFC East or the MLS. It doesn't mean anything. It's the Pac-12.
Speaking of not adapting, my gosh, their inability to adapt. They still think they've got Vita Vea. In Ben Burkervin, and they don't. And they don't even have a facsimile of that. So, bad.
They adapted enough to overcome a halftime deficit 2 weeks in a row.
Yep.
Next question.
What do you got on this one, Kyle? This one's from Zook.
What's up, Zook?
Cream cheese bagel eaten as a sandwich or as 2 separate slices?
2 separate slices.
100% true.
Surely.
Who eats it as a sandwich?
There are people that do that. I mean, like, they'll serve them to you that way. But I will always,
You can have a bagel sandwich, but it can't just have cream cheese.
Right, a bagel sandwich has meat on it.
And,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's a sandwich that happens to use a bagel for bread.
Yeah.
Well, I have never in my lifetime seen a human eat bagel cream cheese as a sandwich, both slices together. Never once. Never once. And hope to never.
Even on all your travels
this
year, Brock?
Sir, could you do that in private?
Never, never. And it's, if someone was doing that on their plan, say, pull those slices apart. That's ridiculous.
Excuse me, this is America. You're not allowed to do that.
What was it, like Cincinnati? We saw Cincinnati-style bagels. They cut them into like
slice them into little pieces.
It's sort of disturbing to watch.
Next question.
Let's see. What city would you like to visit, but you have not yet?
Toronto.
I'd like to go to Toronto.
Or like Montreal. I haven't been to many of the great Canadian cities.
Montreal.
Victoria, Vancouver, that's all I got.
You
got
to go to Montreal. I haven't been to Toronto, but Montreal is one
Montreal,
of the best cities I've been to.
I've heard Burnaby is great. Not Burnaby. What's the one that's the the L.A. of Canada? Oh, what do they call it?
No, no, Calgary?
Research it. No. It's where like a lot
Manitoba?
Of these films, all these films are made in the city.
Oh, they make a lot of films up in B.C. area.
They
so
do.
It could be Burnaby.
Yeah.
Of course, you got Richmond, Regina.
That's the city.
Kamloops.
Of all the cities in the world, that's what you choose? Burnaby?
Yeah.
I don't think it's Burnaby. I don't think
you go anywhere. You've barely traveled, right?
I go to Abbotsford, barely. British yeah. Columbia.
You barely. Can go to just about anywhere. You're taking Burnaby?
Barely.
Well, it's the Hollywood of Canada.
What?
Many have said.
What is this?
The two of them may have just had the dumbest takes that we've ever heard. I think Montreal's good. Have you all, any of you been to Italy? Have been to Rome?
I've been to Rome.
Mm-hmm. How about Istanbul? Anybody been to Istanbul?
Turkey? Haven't been to Turkey. No. Is that where you'd like to go?
I'd want to go to Jerusalem.
What, you got Budapest?
Jerusalem.
I've been to Jerusalem. Beautiful.
Yep.
Jerusalem, made of Jerusalem stone, you know. You know
Jerusalem,
that?
Athens, Rome, Montreal. Yeah, I got a lot to go to.
Big four.
Burnaby.
Yeah. How about U.S. city? Is there a U.S. city you haven't been to but you'd like to?
Nashville.
Gosh, I was thinking about that.
I've never been to Dallas.
Yeah, not yeah. Yeah, that's, you know. That's Bellevue.
Don't really
20.
Need to.
Yeah.
It was great in the 80s, I hear.
Right.
Yep.
When I lived there in the late 2010s.
The other one is Savannah. I've never been to Savannah. I've been to Charleston, which is similar. I've heard Savannah.
Charleston. I got to get to Charleston. Yeah, I've not been to Charleston. I got to get to Charleston.
Best food city in the
Yep. I got to get to Charleston.
And how about Vegas? Oh, I've been there, but still, I'd like to get back there. When is Vegas going
to
reopen?
The last time you went to Vegas?
Oh, I missed
you,
the first time I've missed Vegas with my friends. First year.
I think
college.
Vegas is open and Vegas.
I know, but it's not like it's yeah. open. It's not open.
Right.
Like,
yeah, Vontaze Burfict just got arrested there like 3 days ago.
You can go there, but it doesn't feel right while you're there. Plus, none of our wives will let us go. So, all right, that
Turns
is
out,
our day.
Oh, hold on a second. What? Turns out Burnaby is in Mongolia. Burnaby, Mongolia.
Is that where you want
to
go?
That's what I meant. I meant Burnaby, Mongolia.
Yes. Well, if you have to go to one place.
Yeah, that's what I meant. To
generally,
say.
Burnaby, Mongolia.
Wrong,
is on
wrong
the
country,
list.
Right city.
Gotcha.
When you go there, maybe you can find the Seahawks' identity. All right, we got to go. That's enough for us this week. See you next week after the Seahawks hopefully do not struggle against the Jets. But I'm guessing there'll be some hand-wringing even though they'll win. That's a little prediction here moving forward. Brock, you've got the Chargers and Falcons.
The lovable losers who find ways to lose, yes.
Right, say hi.
And
to
I think maybe possibly you can see me doing a little Fox College football on Saturday in the studio.
I hope you don't get Anthony Lynn fired. I know that's been sort of a habit of yours in the past. So
possible.
We'll see whether Anthony Lynn is coaching by next week. In the meantime, that'll do it for us. I guess the hay.
Barn.
See you, everybody.
Get to the chopper!